So I briefly met her, and I asked her what has YPA done for her, and she said that YPA rocketed her into the next dimension and brought her to the fellowship that she craves. So here from Boulder, Colorado, is Victoria.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Victoria. So much.
Thank you. Woo! It's really good to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's interesting that that's usually these days how I start anytime I share in a meeting or I speak, because when I first arrived at Alcoholics Anonymous, I was miserable, and I was actually really unhappy to be here. But I really felt like I had no other place to go. Nobody else would take me, and I had lost all hope, you know, and I want to thank the committee so much for putting this thing on. I know a lot of times it feels like a party just kind of pops up, but I know that there's lots of work and prayers and working together and a lot of remembering the tradition. So thank you so much for the host committee for putting this on, the experience. And thank you for asking me to speak. It's an honor, you know. And for me, what I kind of like to start with is my sobriety date is October 13, 2007. Because of the program, a fellowship, and a power greater than me, which, you know, when I first got here, I was the girl who would flip old ladies off if they talked about God. And the funny thing is, I'm going to talk to you about God tonight. Actually, a lot. So that's how this thing, you know, works. You know, we change and we grow. And, you know, for me, when I first arrived, people would say, oh, your life gets better. And I didn't believe that. I didn't think that I was worthy of better anyway. So, you know, somebody once said, well, you come into these rooms and your life will get different. And that's been my truth. You know, my life has gotten really different. A couple other, like, in the beginning when I speak to, I kind of like to really focus in on the newcomers because I feel like I only have your attention for maybe 10 more minutes before the next smoke break or vape break, you know, whatever it is these days. You know, and when I first arrived here, I heard a couple things. And you know, out here in this part of the country, you guys usually say, you know, I have a sponsor and my sponsor has a sponsor. And, you know, that's true for me. But when I first arrived to Alcoholics Anonymous, they said things like, find a sponsor that has something that you want. So, of course, the first person that I asked had a really nice car, a good-looking boyfriend, a big house, and, like, lots of money, because I wanted those things, you know? And I didn't realize that picking sponsors has to do today, for me, more about what's going on the inside than what's going on the outside. Because the thing is that the woman that I asked that had a lot of cool things on the outside, at 5 years sober, I went to a bar to 12-step her and carried her out while she was super drunk. Because the thing is it's not about what's going on the outside. For me, this program is about what happens inside. You know, it's about getting a spiritual connection with a power greater than me. You know, to kind of keep the alcoholism at bay. So, you know, find somebody, I like to say instead, find somebody that is the person you want to become. You know, and that was hard for me at first, you know, because I didn't think that I could really become anything. I had thought that nobody would love me, that I wasn't, you know, worthy of anything. I wasn't good enough. I wasn't tall enough. I mean, I'm 5'3", so I'm not really ever going to be tall enough. I just didn't feel enough. And, you know, that's why I love drugs and alcohol, because it just made me feel okay to be in my skin and okay to be me till it stopped working. And, you know, so when I think about somebody that has something that I want, you know, my first sponsor, she had been sober a really long time. And she taught me how to grow up in the program, you know, how to, like, be responsible and show up and become a woman of my word. You know, the sponsor that I have today is a woman in her 60s, and she is somebody who is the kind of woman that she went to the hospital and held her first sponsor's hand as she lay dying from cancer, you know, and that unselfishness love, You know, that's what I want today. Those are the things that I want to become, you know? It's about making my insides get brighter and stronger. Because the other things, you know, the material stuff, like, those things come and go, you know? And in my sobriety, you know, I've been really financially well. I've had to ask for help. You know, I've had moments where my dog has eaten more food than me, you know, and I've had moments where, you know, I'm taking newcomers out left and right. So those things come and go. But as long as I'm, like, continually growing spiritually and I'm keeping, like, my insides and working on that spiritual progress, like, I don't ever have to go. Because that's the thing, is I want to stay here. And, you know, so get a sponsor if you're new. If you're not new, get a sponsor. You know, I sponsored myself from, like, year 5 to 7. I don't recommend that. And it didn't work out so well. But, you know, get a sponsor. The other thing that we talk about here is we talk about meetings. You know, go to meetings. And there's, this, you know, the 90 and 90. Where I got sober and where I'm from in Colorado, there's clubhouses. So basically you can sit outside 6 a.m. and, you know, hang out till 10 o'clock at night, and I went to those, I lived at those, because I was afraid if I went anywhere else that I would get drunk, you know, so if you're new and you're just unsure, you're, you know, afraid, you know, or you don't know how to do this thing, like, it's okay, we've all been there, you know, grab onto somebody here at this thing, and, you know, tell them what's going on, and that's the other piece, you know, I feel like for me, meeting makers, you know, that saying, meeting makers make it, and there's some truth to that, but I found that for me, you know, step takers also get to keep it. You know, and for me, it's more about staying here. You know, getting here is a miracle in itself, but staying here, that's a whole nother beast. And, you know, that's some of the experience, strength, and hope that I want to share with you tonight is, you know, how did I really just grow up in Alcoholics Anonymous? How did I go from that girl that ran away from everything and God to running, you know, moving across country because I didn't want to drink, you know? So to kind of, you know, back up a little, in terms of the whole, I like to share what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today, and, you know, what it was like. I feel like there's this line in the Big Book about pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. And it was a really fancy word, even though I went to college, and I just still didn't understand it, but I knew what it meant, you know? And I felt like I understood. I had felt that before. You know, those moments like waking up or coming to, I was a blackout drinker. I thought that blackout drinking was normal. I thought that everybody, you know, drank to not feel and to black out. It wasn't until I came into these rooms that I realized there's people that spend their whole lives drinking that never black out. You know, and that was weird to me. Like, why would you want to do that? But, you know, and, you know, I'd have those moments where I'd kind of come out of that blackout for a second and I'd be like, whoa, what'd I get myself into? Like, how is this my life? You know, and the way that I dealt with that was just to put more and more in, just like push down. You know, another thing that I hear people talk about sometimes is, you know, their kind of background in terms of where they grew up. The pointer is, like, I had a pretty, you know, normal existence. I mean, I'm from Boulder. It's a liberal, kind of chill, hippie town. There's not much going on there. There's a lot of mountains. You know, my parents actually raised me in a really religious household. And in that religion, it was against the religion to drink. It was considered sinful to drink. So I wasn't even around alcohol, you know, until I went to college. So, you know, sometimes for me, I have to remember it's not about where I came from. You know, I didn't think alcoholism happened to nice girls from Boulder, Colorado. I thought it was for, you know, people who were, like, living under bridges. And I was so grateful to the women especially, you know, but the people who came before me that kind of sat down and read the book with me and were like, this is what an alcoholic is and this is what an alcoholic isn't, you know, and you get to decide if you're one of us. And the beautiful thing about kind of that working that first step is once I decided that I was one of you, that I was an alcoholic, I knew that this thing would work for me too. You know, I didn't have a doubt in my mind. So, you know, I took my first drink at 18. You know, it was my first drunk. And, you know, I got invited to the Cool Kids Party, which this is by far, like, one of the coolest things I've done. And I'm laughing. You know, I spent my whole life trying to, you know, get invited to the Cool Kids table. And it doesn't really necessarily exist. And the thing is, you know, I got invited to that party, you know, that one that all the cool kids are at. And I drank because I wanted them to like me. You know, I lied because I wanted people to like me. I didn't feel comfortable in my skin ever. And the book talks about this feeling of restless, irritable, discontented, and I understood that. I felt that. I lived that. That was how I was all the time. You know, and well before I picked up my first drink, you know, I was finding something to escape that feeling. I was always seeking relief. I was always seeking ways to escape, you know, be it through food, be it through relationships. I attempted to run away, you know, sometimes, and by run away, I would, like, pack my bag and go, like, around the corner and, like, not come home for an hour. You know, I was a pretty, you know, rough child. But you know, when I went to college and I took that first drink, that was the bee's knees for me. Like, you know, when I think about alcoholism in the sense of my obsession of the mind, I can't remember really what I did yesterday. Some of that's like age. Some of that's just, you know, it was a busy day. I couldn't tell you what I had for lunch yesterday, but I can tell you every single detail about that first drink. I can tell you every single detail about how the room smelled. I can tell you what I drank. I can tell you just kind of how much I drank before I lost count. I can tell you who's there. I can remember all the faces, you know. And for me, you know, I love the effect alcohol had on me. And I chased that feeling, you know, to the depths. Because that's really what it kind of became about. I love the saying, you know, willing to go to any lengths for sobriety, because I was willing to go to any lengths to get drunk. You know, I put myself in some really interesting predicaments. You know, and what happened for me is the miracle that kind of blows my mind sometimes is I drank for 5 years. So I've essentially been sober nearly twice as long as I drank, which is a miracle and crazy for me to think about, because I didn't necessarily anticipate that or plan that. But, you know, it was fast and it was furious. And I went from, you know, that party girl, you know, who thought I was really adorable at the parties, but falling down is not adorable. You know, bruising your knees. And, you know, my friend started playing rock, paper, scissors to see who would carry me out of the bar, who would hold my hair back, you know, as I vomited. Like, that was kind of my gang, you know. And I finally reached a point where I just sought out places that allowed me to drink, you know, the way I wanted to. Because one of my mottos in that is I just kind of, I said, I do what I want, you know, and if anybody, anything, job, relationships, anything got in the way of my drinking, it had to go. Like, it wasn't even a second thought. And, you know, I remember that I got a scholarship to go to CU Boulder, and I left that, you know, to go live with a drug dealer, because I thought that's, you know, that's what you do. Those are sane, sound decisions. I thought they were at the time. I had a sponsor who pointed out that that's quite insane. This is not sane and sound. That step two really got nailed into me when she was like, yeah, it's implying that you're insane, Victoria, because right now you are. But I just found places that allowed me to drink and use the way that I wanted to. And I can always best picture it as finding a bar that served me a pitcher of alcohol, not like a beer, you know, hard liquors, that they just put a straw in it. I didn't have to share it with anybody, you know, because I didn't share my alcohol. That wasn't a thing. And I sought out places like that. I chased places like that. I moved around the country seeking that. And when it stopped working was, you know, to the point of, A, I couldn't, you know, the drugs and alcohol didn't take me to the places like I wanted them to take me anymore. I'd kind of come out of that blackout and I'd be like, whoa, who are you? Where am I? What's going on? And the thing is like I couldn't be scared into getting sober. I had been overdosing so much that a hospital in Colorado actually knew me on a first name basis. And you know, even the nurses there were like, hey, you should stop drinking, or you should stop doing all of these things. Because, you know, there was one time particularly that they said, had I not gone in, that my heart would have exploded, I would have died instantly. And I would love to tell you that that was my last drunk. It wasn't. You know, it didn't scare me. You know, months after that, my father, you know, asked me to leave the house. And he said, you know, me and your mother have doubled your life insurance because that's how much hope we have in you that you're actually going to, you know, get sober. I had tried going to Alcoholics Anonymous before. I was raised religiously, so I believe that I had had, you know, God and spirituality before. And, you know, the book kind of talks about is maybe we're not using it correctly. You know, and those times that I went to AA before, I went to a meeting every day because I had to. I was in a sober house, and I called my sponsor every day because I had to. And I didn't do anything else, and I didn't stay sober. You know, and it wasn't until I came into here later, you know, in October of 07, that I realized, like, I had to sincerely be willing to go to any lengths to do this thing. That I had to, you know, work the steps. I had to really grasp the spiritual experience, you know, if I wanted a chance at this thing. You know, and, you know, I'd love to say that my dad, you know, having that conversation with me and my mom planning my funeral, you know, my mom literally was like, this is what I'm going to say. And it was really sad. And I left. I would love to say that that was my last drink. And it wasn't. You know, but my last drink came, you know, a few months after that. You know, still October or August, September of 07, those are still gone. I still couldn't tell you to this day some of the things that happened. But what I do remember that happened is you know, there's a saying that I hear and hear a lot, and it says, you know, my best thinking got me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And my truth in that is that my best thinking got me drunk. You know, I was sitting at work always thinking about where to get the next, you know, next drink, next drug, you know. But, you know, on October 13th of 07, what happened is, like, I kind of woke up, and at this point, you know, homeless, jobless, I'm, like, couch surfing. I wouldn't have told you that I was homeless at the time, you know, but when you sleep on people's couches for months on end and nobody can send you a letter because you don't have a permanent address, you tend to, you know, not have a residence. But what I had found was that in my head were, you know, and that's where I've been taught for me, my disease centers in my mind. And in my mind, I, you know, I have these thoughts. And the first thought is, you know, I could just go out and drink and I could keep living the way I was living. And the thing is, I didn't want to keep living the way that I was living anymore. Like, that was what brought me into these rooms. It's just I wanted something different. I didn't want to feel the way I felt anymore, because people would say things like, you never have to drink again. And I was 23 and I was like, oh, that sounds like forever. But people would say things like, you don't ever have to feel the way you feel again. And, like, I wanted that. You know, so I had this thought. I could drink, I could keep living the way that I was living, you know, or I could, you know, kill myself because I couldn't live with myself anymore, you know. And that's the thing with this disease is, for me, you know, people talk about my disease wants me dead. You know, it's not going to really care how it gets me there. It just wants me to die. You know, I believe that my disease thinks that it can go on without me, which is silly. But, you know, it doesn't really care how it's going to do it. You know, and for me, those are the two thoughts that I'm, you know, riling with. And then out of nowhere comes this, like, third thought. And I always call it the or, because for me, this is a life or death program. And that or, you know, it kind of talks about it in the big book, where it talks about, you know, we could blot out the consciousness of our intolerable situation or accept spiritual help. You know, those are the ors for me. And I love the part in We Agnostics where it kind of talks about to be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live a life on spiritual principles are not easy alternatives for an alcoholic to face. I was like, yeah, they know me. Because, you know, people with maybe other illnesses, when you're like, hey, here's a book, you know, you read it, you pray, you take some spiritual steps, you take some action, and it will help, like, keep your disease at bay and kind of put it in remission. Like, you tell somebody with, like, you know, other various illnesses that, they're like, okay, cool, sign me up. Me as an alcoholic, like, I had to be convinced. I was like, I don't know if I want that. But this other thought, you know, which is the or, was, I could come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I can sincerely try to get sober. And there was a lot of depth and weight in that word sincerely. Because for me today, this thing isn't so much about the talk, it's about the walk. You know, it's about the action. I was told that this is a spiritual program of action, and, you know, I can quote the big book till I'm blue in the face. But unless I'm taking action, nothing's going to change. You know, and people would say, if nothing changes, nothing changes. And what happened when I came into the rooms, I did that. I was sincere. I wanted help. I didn't know how to get help. And I couldn't imagine staying sober for a week. I remember, like, white knuckling it and detoxing and just being like, oh my gosh, how am I not going to drink for a week? That's so long. So if you're new, if you're in that, you can do it. We got you. And I made it through, and then I made it a week, and then I made it like 8 days, and I was like, woo, 8 days. That was the longest week of my life. I don't know about you guys, but it was the longest one of mine. You know, and those first 30 days, woo, those 30 days seemed longer than the last 9 years for sure. But the thing is when I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd heard some things that said, you know, don't drink between meetings, and don't leave before the miracle happens. And there were these ladies that would, like, they were, you know, older and, like, my mother's and grandmother's age, and they would, like, hug me, and they'd say, we love you till you can love yourself. And I had never heard that before. You know, I had no friends. I had no family in my life. The only person hanging out in my life was a guy who said, I'm hanging out with you because I pity you, because I feel bad for you, and I'm afraid that if I leave you, you're just going to die, and nobody's going to know. And so to have these women kind of come up and you know, hug me and just, you know, tell me that I was worth it was amazing. And I got a sponsor, and more of, you know, God kind of found me a sponsor. It was this woman, you know, with really long-term sobriety, and she came up to me and said, hey, do you want to come to my house for coffee and read the book? And I was like, sure, I don't have anything else to do. And when we sat down, you know, she proceeded to open the book and asked me if I wanted to work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous as they're laid out in the big book, and if I wanted a chance to see my life change, you know, and that I agreed, you know. And there was a few things that she told me in that conversation that resonated with me. She said, you know, if you're willing to go to any lengths for your sobriety, I'll be willing to go to any lengths right along with you. But the minute you stop being willing, I can't help you, you know. And another thing that she said, and I tend to try to keep my language a little clean at these things, but the way that she said it just made so much sense. You know, she said, I don't care what you tell the rest of the world. When you come to this table and you sit down with me, you tell the fucking truth, even if it fucking hurts. You know, and that saved my life. Because, like, I needed a place to be honest. I didn't know how to be honest, you know, and I didn't know how to tell, like, people about all those, like, cause, like, the book talks about these causes and conditions and all those things that, like, I kept stuffing down with more and more, you know, drugs, alcohol. Like, I didn't want to feel those things. And I did that. And the other thing is she talked about the open-mindedness of the program. And I was very bitterly agnostic when I got sober. I flipped old ladies off. If people talked about God, I would, like, storm out of the room. And my sponsor, you know, God bless her, she changed the book as we were reading. You know, anytime it said God, she changed it to love or something that I could understand. And, you know, she just really kind of dug it into me that I needed a higher power and I wasn't it, you know, and, you know, the guy I was dating wasn't it either. So I kind of had to keep looking. And, you know, the powerlessness of our disease is just so baffling. But like I said, the minute I realized that I was powerless, the minute I realized that I, on my own, no matter how hard I tried, no matter how much I went to church, no matter how much I moved around the country, no matter what I did, all the ways that I tried to control it and enjoy it, and if I was controlling it, I wasn't, enjoying it, and if I was enjoying drinking, I wasn't controlling it. All the ways that I did that just didn't work. Nothing I did worked. Nothing anybody else did worked. And I remember being defeated. I remember, you know, taking like 6 months to do my first step because I just didn't want to admit that I was powerless. I thought that I was a tough cookie and nobody was going to tell me, you know, that I couldn't do something. And I remember that moment, though, of being licked and really just being like, okay, I'll accept this spiritual help. I don't know what it is. I don't care what it is right now. I just know that I need something. And the minute I did that, I got so much hope. Like, that's what the theme of the conference is about this anchor, you know, and being grounded. And, like, that started to ground me. As far as, you know, the spiritual, my first concept of God was the Rocky Mountains, you know, and I like that acronym, you know, G-O-D, the Great Outdoors, because that's really where I could kind of feel, you know, something greater than me. I mean, the Rocky Mountains, they're a little bit bigger than me. I knew that I could even, like, and I would take these characteristics of the Rocky Mountains, like, If it was cloudy and I couldn't see them, they still were there. You know, they were unmovable. You know, they seemed vast at times. They were mysterious. You know, they were these things that I could take and kind of, you know, really relate to what I believe my higher power to be. And, you know, I did the steps, and I completed the steps kind of and kind of started with that. And I turned my will over the best that I could, and I did an inventory, and my life changed. And about 3 years sober, I kind of became what I felt was the AA poster child. I had had, like, I got married in sobriety. I, you know, got a cool new job. I went back to school and became a teacher, you know, so I was, like, teaching kindergarten. I, you know, had money. I'd like walk around and I was like, yeah, I'm like an A, like spiritual giant. Yes, my 3 years, woo. And for me, what kind of happened is that, you know, I got this really amazing gift to go study abroad in Costa Rica. I got a scholarship to do so, which was a gift. And I went and lived there for like 6 months. Didn't go to meetings, not because I didn't want to, because there really wasn't any. I was living in the jungle of Costa Rica. And I didn't tell, you know, a lot of those defects, like, for me, drinking's but a symptom of this thing. And a lot of those other defects, like, once I put down the booze, like, I'm still left with me. Like, a lot of those defects still started creeping back up. You know, I started having problems in my marriage. Like, I wasn't, you know, a very nice person at the time. You know, I started lying to people around me again, you know, because I was ashamed to tell them, like, I was an alcoholic because I didn't want them to think, like, I wasn't cool, which is why I love WIPA, because, like, we make, like, alcoholics, like, we're cool. like, I think that these conventions and things are very cool. And, but I just got really disconnected, and I remember coming back from Costa Rica, and I was like, cool, I kept myself sober, so I don't need to go to meetings, I don't need to really do anything, you know, with the program. My sponsees that I had all kind of worked the steps, and I was like, cool, they can go fly on their own, and I just kind of, you know, stopped showing up. And I got divorced, you know. My parents got divorced, you know, a lot of painful things happened, you know, my grandfather passed away, and I started to blame God, you know, like, how could these things happen to me? I came in and did the program, I did what you guys told me to do, like, why are bad things happening? Like, that's not supposed to happen, you know, and I realized today that life on life's terms means that life is going to happen, whether I'm sober or not. And the beauty of what I have today is I have the ability to go through life authentically. That sometimes it's really hard, and sometimes it's really uncomfortable, and sometimes I do get mad, and sometimes I do get hurt. But, like, I don't, A, have to pick up a drink over that, which is a miracle, because, like, one of my relapses was after, like, a guy that I liked looked at a girl, and I was like, cool, I'm gonna get drunk over that, you know? So for me today to, like, go through, like, divorces and deaths and pain, like, and not drink, like, that's cool. And, like, the feelings, like, I used to run away from my feelings. That's why I love the effect of alcohol. And I can feel today, like, I, you know, I'm human, I get feelings, and I can sit with them. And I don't have to try to figure out what they are, where they're coming from, how to get out of them. Like, I can just kind of be, like, which is amazing today for me, you know, because that wasn't who I was. You know, so what ended up happening in those years is I got dry. It got really dark, you know, and dark is going to meetings, pretending like everything's okay, and it's not inside, you know, and that's why I talked about, like, for me, this is such an inside job, you know, because, like, my outside still look good. Everyone's like, oh, you're doing great, Victoria, woo, here's another year, woo, and I was like, I'm dying inside. You know, but something that, you know, when we kind of stood up and talked about the, you know, the service, there's this line in the book, nothing assures immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. And I believe that in a few ways. And what my experience in that has been that when I was kind of going through some of that gnarly stuff of getting divorced, you know, I said this prayer to God, and I was like, hey, God, can you teach me how to love? Because clearly I can't. I'm getting divorced. Okay, cool. And in my mind, I was going to get, like, a really cool, like, Brazilian boyfriend. What ended up happening is I got three sponsees. But I learned how to love. I learned how to love unconditionally. I learned how to be selfless. I learned how to give. You know, and I showed up for them, and I'm like sitting there like boohooing before, you know, and I'd pray. That was the secret. I joke with one of my former sponsees today, the secret, you know, she'll tell me things that I used to tell her, and I said, the secret is anytime we'd meet, I usually get there before you, and I just pray. You know, I didn't really know what I had to offer. I thought that my life was falling apart. And the thing is in that I had found that I had a lot to offer, and, you know, I watched her life change. And that was the miracle, like to watch somebody else's life change. And the reason that I even deeply more believe that working with other alcoholics keeps us sober is in this, is that I finally reached a point where I stopped talking to anybody from the rooms. And the people who would reach out to me and call me and check on me and ask if I was okay were my former sponsees. And they, because we had worked the process of steps, because I told them the truth and they told me the truth no matter fucking what, they saw through my BS. Like, they saw through, like, oh, I'm fine. They're like, oh, yeah, fine. Freaked out and scared, erotic, afraid, you know, whatever. You're not fine. And all the things that I had told them, a lot of the experience, strength, and hope that I had given them, they were just throwing it back at me. And what ended up happening for me is I reached a point at 7 years sober where I was ready to cash in. I thought about, you know, I just was in so much pain. I had been, you know, relapse, this disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And I think relapse is not something that just kind of, like, happens. Like, it is a progression back into that insanity. My sponsor used to always say, you're either going forward or you're going backwards. And I talk about these things because for a long time I was ashamed, like, oh, like, I started thinking about drinking again. But then I realized I'm probably not the only one. And that, you know, my experience drinking hope is, like, I went to those extremes and I didn't pick up a drink. And that's a miracle. But I reached the point where I called a sponsee, and she was from Concord, New Hampshire. And I'd never even heard of New Hampshire. I thought it was Boston. I realize now it's not. I've lived in both. Really different. I called her and I said, you know, I'm going to go get drunk tonight. And when a friend came over for dinner and poured a glass of wine, and there it was. You know, and nothing was stopping me. And the thing is this book talks about there will come a time where you are without defense against the first drink. Like, I didn't have it. I had no defense, and that defense has to come from a power greater than you, like, period. It says that. And, you know, I remember sitting there, and I picked it up, and I was like, all right, here we go. Like, I give up. I'm in so much pain. And my phone rings, and, of course, my sponsor is calling me. My sponsor that never called sponsees, that she was the kind of sponsor that if you didn't call her, like, you weren't willing. But for some reason, in that moment, she called me. She said she felt the need to call me. And I remember going to the room and, like, crying and telling her what was up. And she said, Victoria, do you want to stay sober for you? And I was like, no. She's like, what about your family? How are they going to feel? I was like, I don't care. She's like, what about all the friends in AA and your fellowship and your home group? I was like, I don't care. And then she said something that really hit my heart. She said, what about those women that you're going to help? What about those women who are going to come after you? And I was like, I can do it for them. I can not drink today, just for today. And I can do it for them. And, you know, I talked to her for a little while. I said a prayer, and, you know, I didn't drink the drink. And what ended up happening is I had a choice, and my choice, once again, was how willing to any lengths was I to go for sobriety. Here I was in Colorado, dying, empty, alone. And my friend, my former sponsee, reached out and she said, why don't you move to New Hampshire and come see what we have to offer? Why don't you come and be of service? Why don't you carry the message to people? Why don't you pack more into the mainstream of life? Why don't you stop sitting around on your couch feeling sorry for yourself and go and do something? Like, just get in your car and do it. And the thing is a lot of times people do ask me what brought me, you know, to this part of the country. And in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I can tell the truth. I can say it was absolutely because I didn't want to drink. And it was absolutely because I wanted to continue to stay sober. And I did that. You know, I happened to move in the winter of 2016, which was like the worst nor'easter in like history. Woo, that's faith. But I got my dog and I got in my car and I came here. And what ended up happening is that YPA, I got involved in NECIPA. NECIPA, I see you. I got involved in NECIPA and I was elected outreach chair, which means that I had to drive all over New England and meet people and talk to people and get involved again. And like, that kind of lit my heart on fire again for this thing. I got a sponsor again. I worked the process of steps again, and I watched my life change again. And the thing that changed a lot was my relationship with God. Because the thing is, if I don't have a solid relationship with God, I'm really struggling in my relationship with everybody else. And, for a long time, like, I was really bitterly agnostic, and for a long time, sobriety, you know, the concept, it was about a concept of God. It wasn't about actual, like, having a relationship, like, something that I, you know, work at and talk to and, you know, convene with. But I laugh because a thing, you know, that God put in my life to teach me about a relationship was a dog. If you follow me on Facebook, you've probably seen a million pictures of my dog. I'm sorry. I rescued this dog, you know, and I got this dog, you know, because I was heartbroken, and my sponsor was like, why don't you try to love, like, a dog or something instead of, you know, chasing after the next not person for you. And I did that, and I got this dog, and I was like, fine, I'm going to love this dog. And, you know, anybody who knows me knows that I really love my dog. But what I found, you know, what my dog, his name is Denali. What Denali kind of taught me is he's a husky chuck lab, and he loves to run. He loves to run away. He kind of loves to do, like, his own thing. He makes it really clear. And I kept getting frustrated, and I was sitting down with my sponsor one day, and she was really pointing out to me that maybe that's how like, me and God work sometimes. Like, I keep running away. I keep going into self-will and doing it my way, and God's kind of like, oh, a little frustrated. But at the same time, like, I started just letting Denali run because he loves to run and he has this spirit about him. And I realized, like, I didn't want to break him of that. And I realized, like, my higher power, like, doesn't want to break my spirit. My higher power wants me to be me. Like, it says on our coins, to thy own self be true. Like, I get to be myself today. And, turning my will over to God as I understand God isn't about, like, becoming something that I'm not. It's about becoming the woman and the person that I am. You know, and the thing that I had found, like, with my dog is, you know, I let him run free sometimes. I don't want to break his spirit. But sometimes, like, because I love him, I have to intervene for his protection. Sometimes I have to be like, no, don't run over there. Or sometimes I have to leash him because there's cars, there's porcupines, which aren't fun. He found out the hard way, just like I find out things the hard way. Some of my previous relationships, wow. It's felt like porcupines. But and that's how it kind of feels with God. Like, me turning my will over isn't so much about God being like, okay, you're kind of, I was afraid I was going to be a Stepford wife, like, robotic, empty, you know, and it's about, I get to be me, and sometimes God, like, redirects me, like, don't date that person, don't take that job, don't go there, not because God doesn't love me, doesn't want me, you know, to be happy, because God's just trying to protect me. God's trying to keep me safe, you know, and sometimes I'm stubborn. And I keep doing the same thing over and over again till it hurts enough. And I'm like, okay, ready to try something different. You know, and I really learned how to develop that relationship and get that trust. You know, my dog trusts me. And, you know, something a sponsor pointed out to me is that no matter how far he runs sometimes or, you know, how upset I get, he always comes back. And she reminded me, like, you know, there are times where I'm kind of out there and I'm in pain and I can always find my way back to God. You know, and sometimes it's as simple as walking into a meeting and reaching out. What it's been like in moving into New England, you know, and is it's been life-changing. I was so afraid to do anything. To move out here, to drive around, you know, by myself, to move to a place where I don't know many people, and, like, YPA saved me, like, I came in the door, like, coming in hot because I found out I was speaking last minute, and I was, like, getting hugs left and right, and, like, there's love in these rooms. There's hope in these rooms. There was no love, and there was no hope where I came from, you know, and I've learned how to grow up in these rooms, because that's the thing, you know. I will always be young at heart, but at some point, you know, I kind of had to, like, learn how to, like, adult. Sometimes adulting is, like, you know, me coloring in my, you know, Ninja Turtles onesie, but, you know, I'm adulting. But it's things like, you know, I pay my bills on time to the best of my ability. You know, I asked for help. I got really sick in New Hampshire, and I had to reach out, and I had to ask for help. And, you know, lately how I've kind of been ending my talks is my alcoholism, my disease when I was active, affected so many people in my life. I burned so many bridges. And the thing is in recovery, I have that same power. Like, my recovery is, like, progressive, you know. It grows, it gets bigger, you know, it reaches out. Like, I get to build these amazing relationships as long as I continue to grow spiritually. And I don't have to have it all in one day. You know, if you're hurting, if you're new, if you're unsure, like, if you don't like, you know, the ideal of a God, like, that's okay. Like, I didn't do my first, like, third step until I was 7 years sober. But I kept coming back, and I was willing to believe in something greater than me. And I didn't pick up no matter what. And there was a lot of no matter whats that's happened in the last 9 years. But the gifts, like, keep on getting bigger. You know, and some of those gifts, like, one of my favorite nine-step stories is I had the pleasure to go to the World Convention in San Antonio in 2010. Yeah. It was a good time. And I needed to make amends to my grandfather. And my dad and my mom hadn't talked to my grandfather in years. And I was like, I just really got to do this ninth step. And my dad didn't even want to go. He was like, I'm going to drop you off. And I'm going to, like, drive around the block or whatever. And because he, you know, they were mad at each other for whatever they were mad at each other about. And I went and I made this amends. And 2 weeks later, my grandpa got ill and he was hospitalized. And, you know, I drove with my family back to, he lived in Kansas, to Kansas, and I watched my dad, you know, hold his father's hand while he lay dying, that, like, weeks ago, they weren't even talking, you know, and that part of that happened because of my willingness to go to any lengths, my willingness to do what's asked of me in this program, even when I don't like it, and believe me, there have been times I don't like it, but I do it anyway. You know, that's been a huge thing. Like, I do it anyway, and I watch, you know, the impact and the way people's lives have changed. And, you know, I had found out later that my grandfather was so mad at my dad that he had written him out of his will. And in those last 2 weeks, he changed things. And he wrote him back into his will, and he wrote him a very lovely letter. You know, and they're not in the program, you know, but they got a piece of it because they got to watch my spiritual actions. And, you know, in terms of, like, amends and relationships, because at the end of the day, that's what a lot is about, you know, relationships. I learned how to have a relationship with God so I can learn how to have a relationship with everyone else. My mom was, like, maybe 40 pages on my fourth step. I just remember, like, and there's a prayer in there that my sponsor would, like, beat into my head, and I had to say the four-step prayer all the time because I had so much hurt and hate in my heart for my mother. And I just remember looking at my sponsor and going, can God ever fix this? And she's like, yeah, God can. You know, you just got to get out of the way and let him. And I kept doing my part. I kept showing up. It took a really long time. But what ended up happening is when I moved out here, my mom came with me, and we had the most amazing time. And I got to, you know, my mom actually turned around and made amends to me, you know, for all those hurts, all those things that she had done wrong. She's not in our program. You know, she's not somebody that's told, like, you know, here's a book, step by step, of what you need to do. But she did it because she watched the example that I had led for the last few years. And, you know, I got to forgive her. And today we are, my mom texts me every day and tells me she loves me. And this is a woman that could not watch me die. And that today, you know, she tells the world that she's got her daughter back. She calls me without fail every year that I celebrate. and says that she loves me and she's proud of me. You know, and these are the miracles that we get in this program. You know, and my father, you know, it's funny that I'm speaking tonight because I just did another inventory, and I had not felt as close to my dad as I wanted to be since I moved out here. And, you know, he didn't call me on my AA birthday, you know, because it's a big deal, you know, parade and everything. It's not. I'm just grateful to be alive another day because I was dying. But right before this meeting, as I'm like rushing around, you know, trying to get my hair together and my makeup on, you know, I get a text from my dad, and you know, he texted me and he said, you know, my wife's sister-in-law just died of alcoholism. She was in her early 50s, and he's like, I'm just so proud of you and what you've done for the last 9 years, that you haven't picked up a drink. And he's like, I actually just realized tonight how hard that is. How hard that is for alcoholics to not drink, and I'm just really proud of you. Like, that's a miracle. And, you know, I'm just amazed at these gifts that I get today. You know, a lot of the gifts that I've talked about haven't necessarily been material. You know, I am really excited when I have 2 zeros on my bank account, but the thing is, it's not about that. What really gets me excited is calling friends from other states that I don't see and being like, I'll see you guys in a few hours. What gets me really excited is, you know, today I'm in a relationship, and, you know, I'm wrong a lot, and I admit that, and, like, that's huge. Because that wasn't, you know, who I was when I got here. That wasn't who I was for the first few years of my sobriety. I pray. I get up, and I pray every day. And if I don't, my day is kind of out the window. You know, Dr. Bob says, you know, trust God, clean house, and help others. And it's not simple. Like, it really is. I complicate it with my, like, mind. But I have found that I haven't had to pick up a drink in a very, very long time for me. You know, the girl who was, like, jumping up and down at 8 days. You know, because I've continued to trust God, clean house, and help others. You know, even when I haven't wanted to, even when it's dark. So, you know, if you're new, welcome. You never have to drink again. You don't have to feel the way that you feel, you know. And even if you're not new, if you're in that, like, dark period, you know, or maybe you're just unsure, because that's the thing that I realized once I kind of settled down and got out here and did some work with my sponsors, that I didn't really want to drink. I just didn't know how to live through what I was going through. I didn't know how to get through the next step, you know. I got kind of stuck. And that's what I've loved about this program, is the people who come before me, who show me how to get through that. And then in turn, I turn around and I help other people get through that. And that's an amazing gift. You know, I love that this conference has talked about being anchored, because moving here in this, you know, this eastern part of the country has grounded me in this program and grounded me in a way that I know that, you know, one day at a time, if I keep doing what I'm doing, I never have to drink again. And that's a gift. You know, and I hope that tonight you heard something that gives you hope, because that's what this thing is about. And I'm very, very grateful, and I'm always honored to be able to carry the message. And thank you all for letting me share.